Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy. You know, we began with just this influx of data and information that's coming in, and it's just amazing how quickly it's coming. And that's why we're here, to be able to kind of bring some sense to this. We talked about, you know, recently last week about, you know, schizophrenic leadership. Is it really schizophrenic, or is it a technique? And it's just amazing what's taking place. And so that's why we're bringing this information to you. We have so much. We're so glad that you've joined us, our VFN radio audience and our CTN audience around the nation, but also on the Gulf Coast, Monday through Friday, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. in your living rooms. We're so glad to be able to be there. First, we want to bring you a direct report from the Jerusalem Post of what's taking place fresh from Jerusalem. Watch.
Central and southern Israel hit with rockets. IDF operation in full force on third day. Netanyahu orders increase in attacks on Gaza. And the Jerusalem Post interviews Nir Barkat. Shalom and welcome to the Jerusalem Post News. Today is Thursday, July 10th, and we are bringing you the latest updates on Operation Protective Edge. Hello. On the third day of escalating violence between Israel and Gaza, Israeli cities from south to north are experiencing life under rocket fire. The Iron Dome anti-rocket system intercepted at least 7 projectiles over the metropolitan Tel Aviv area on Thursday. On Wednesday night and again on Thursday morning, rockets were aimed at the southern city of Dimona, the home of Israel's nuclear reactor. Hamas said they were attempting to hit the sensitive location. Operation Protective Edge continued in full force overnight Wednesday and Thursday morning as the IDF attacked over 330 terror sites. Officials in Gaza say at least 60 Palestinians have been killed since the beginning of the operation 3 days ago. The IDF has been targeting homes of Hamas members and infrastructure, as well as weapons storage facilities, tunnels, and government buildings. In total, since the beginning of the operation, 750 targets in Gaza have been hit, and 800 tons of explosives have been used in the strikes. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Wednesday said that Israel will step up its actions against Hamas and the other terrorist organizations operating from Gaza.
צריך, אמרתי, ואני אומר עוד פעם, אורך רוח, סבלנות, נחישות ותקיפות.
Jerusalem Mayor Nir Barkat met with Jerusalem Post correspondent Daniel Eisenbud for an exclusive interview.
This is Daniel K. Eisenbud. I'm in Safra Square in the capital, about to meet with Jerusalem Mayor Nir Barkat to discuss the latest escalation in tensions between Israelis and Hamas and what he is doing to address the situation here in Jerusalem. As mayor of Jerusalem, what would you say to the international community right now as this conflict continues to escalate and rockets land outside of the city?
Well, first of all, if you notice and look at the statistics, no one in Israel has been hurt. So Israel knows how to very well defend itself. Simultaneously, while we know how to be cautious and make sure that we do the right procedures in case of an alert, the reality is that generally Israel is one of the safest places in the world.
The Jerusalem Post would like to send its condolences to the Azrieli family on the loss of David, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and passionate Zionist.
Well, that is amazing what's taking place right there. We're just so good to have those reports from the Jerusalem Post. You can find out more details at vfntv.com. We're hoping to have a video. I look kind of surprised. I'm thinking, like, we hope we had a video to be able to show you, and we don't have this video to show you, but hopefully maybe in our next program. But it's a security camera at a gas station as they're just pumping their gas, and you're hearing all these sirens go off because these missiles are being fired from Gaza into the population. And with this 1 minute video, but all of a sudden you see them start looking around. Obviously you're hearing alarms go off, and then you're seeing, you can't, I mean, there's no sound. But then you see this missile come right down in the gas station where they were at. Wow. This gets coming. And it's just like, I was listening to a reporter this morning on CBN, and she was saying, you know, I was there during the Lebanon bombing over the northern border into Israel with Pat Robinson. And she said, really, it's like Russian roulette. You hear the siren, you run for cover. But the truth is there a bullet in the chamber where you're going? I mean, she didn't see the bullet in the chamber, but Russian roulette is about you put one bullet in, you have six opportunities, you spin it, and then you pull the trigger and see if you die or not. I mean, you're not going to know where this bomb's going to land. And so even though you're running and hiding, you could be going exactly where that thing's going to land, like in this gas station. So that's why we have to pray. We have to pray. We have to support Israel and say, and, you know, stand up for your right. Stand up. You know, you have a right to stand up for your protection of your people and to defend your nation. And, you know, from our perspective, they're using just a major extent of mercy.
Yeah.
And grace. But when we get back from this break, we're going to be showing you this beautiful understanding of another dimension of how blessed Israel is and what are they doing with water conservation, but also how they're blessing the world, including Haiti and these other nations, because of what they're doing. And remember, this is what God said. He says, you will be a blessing to all the people on the earth. That's what he told Jacob, and Jacob's name got changed to Israel. So we're looking specifically at how God is using Jacob, using Israel to bless the nation, the people on the earth. It's just so cool. Even if they deny them and they hate them.
That's right.
Even if they're running an extension cord, as we talked about in yesterday's program, providing power to Gaza Strip, the very ones that are providing power to are using it to attack them, and it knocks the power out, he said. And then they complain that the power is out. He goes, isn't that crazy? That's crazy. We're so excited about bringing this next part of water in Israel. How has God blessed the work of the hands of the Jewish people? And you're getting a perspective. Think about this. When you see this, think about this. All this wrong narrative and all this these lies that are being promulgated against Israel, you're about to see, as you saw yesterday, you're going to see that this couldn't be true because they're actually giving their enemies water. And they're helping people survive and blessing so many folks. Take a look at this.
More than half of this country's land is desert. And we have a severe water shortage. Moses led us to Israel, a country that has no oil, no water, not too good soil. And we had to make the best out of it.
Thousands of years ago, Moses had to strike a rock to get water in the desert. Well, today Israelis are taking a slightly different approach, using technology and creativity. In Israel, the main sources of drinking water are the Sea of Galilee and two underground aquifers. If rainfall is short, so is the nation's water supply. In 1953, Israel started building the National Water Carrier, a system of pipelines, canals, and reservoirs that carry water from the Sea of Galilee to the rest of Israel.
So we didn't have water. Okay, we developed water technology. One of the things that Israel has excelled in is taking some people would see as risk factors or as curses and turning them into blessings. From the time of Bilam, the Jewish people have always been able to somehow turn the curse into a blessing.
The pipelines were a good start, but Israel's fresh water supply wasn't enough to support a growing country. So Israelis started looking west to the Mediterranean. For thousands of years, the Mediterranean Sea was the center of the ancient world, the crossroads between Europe, Asia, and Africa. And now it's one of Israel's greatest natural resources.
Israel is desalinating so much of its drinking water, the majority of our drinking water's origin will be the Mediterranean Sea by the end of next year.
Today, Israel produces 450 million cubic meters of drinkable water a day. Through a process called seawater reverse osmosis, water can go from the ocean to the faucet in less than 90 minutes. The Israeli technology is now used in more than 40 countries around the world. And thanks to the Mediterranean, Israel may soon have something that was once unthinkable, a water surplus.
In this country, we don't have much water, except somehow, by the end of this decade, Israel is going to become a net water exporter. Just on today's news, there was an item about how Israel is stepping up the export of water to Jordan in order to supply water for all the Syrian refugees who are fleeing into Jordan.
While Israel produces drinking water from the sea, many farmers are getting water for their crops literally out of thin air. Ancient Israelites used stones to collect the dew every morning. Now an Israeli company is using plastic trays to do the same. The trays were developed by Talyad Technologies, which means God's dew in Hebrew. Every morning, these trays channel the dew straight into the roots of the plants. They also prevent weeds from growing between the plants and reduce water usage by up to 50%. Israeli farmers have always made good use of their water, but it wasn't long before they realized that in order to survive, they also needed to start reusing it.
Today, Israel recycles 80% of its wastewater. The closest competitor is Spain with 10%. So we recycle more than 8 times more water than any other country on the planet.
Israelis developed a way to purify wastewater using ultraviolet light. This treated water is then used to irrigate crops.
If you use it for vegetables, then you would like to clean it to the extent that you can almost drink it. So it is treated to a very high degree. Today, 60% of the water that is irrigating fields in Israel is produced water and not natural water. And I'll give you an example of our farm here on the kibbutz. We grow jojoba, and we use only sewage water, only treated wastewater to irrigate our jojoba. And this is done all over Israel.
Israel may be short on fresh water, but the country's Negev Desert is sitting on an underground ocean, too salty to drink or desalinate. So Israeli settlers found a new way to use it.
You cannot really fight nature. Nature will fight you back. We found out after the years that it's better to cooperate and to coordinate with what you've got.
Yoav Dagan is one of a growing number of Israelis who have left the ocean to go fishing in the desert. They build fish farms using the warm, salty water from underground. It's ideal for raising saltwater fish like tilapia, sea bass, and barramundi.
The place here is working without chemicals, without anything. It's very healthy, it's friendly for the environment. And it's good for us in a matter of the pocket. We are making good money, and this is by the bottom line.
At this kibbutz in the Negev Desert, even the fish waste is put to use. Every week, the water in these tanks is replaced and pumped underground to irrigate the nearby olive grove. The fish waste in the water makes an ideal natural fertilizer.
As you can see on the side, the olives are growing around the farm, around the fish, and are doing very well without any other chemicals, only by the nutrients of the fish.
Israel has taken this idea to other countries struggling with water and food shortages.
We're taking African villages, teaching them how to essentially build fish farms. If you look at around Lake Victoria, the Nile perch were dying. And Israelis are now going in to teach the farmers how to grow them in ponds so that you can actually continue to eat the Nile perch.
Over the years, Israelis also found new ways to use less water. And as always, they started in the desert.
There's the story of the Arava. Sometimes as 20 millimeters of rain annual fall, very harsh climate, and still, thanks to drip irrigation, this became the vegetable barn of Israel. 65% of vegetable export out of Israel, mainly to Europe, is coming from the Arava.
Today, even the driest parts of the desert are blooming, with help from a process called drip irrigation. The idea is older than the state of Israel itself.
When the first settlers came here, young people came from the city and they wanted to be farmers. And they came to Kibbutz Hatzirim and they faced many challenges. Arid land, high salinity, not enough water. And there was even a time when they considered moving to another place. But then Ben-Gurion came, who was a leader with a real vision, and he said, guys, if you want to move, it's okay, but further south, not back to the north. And we stayed here and we continued and we did some experiment, but still we were struggling. Then we met the guy who invented drip irrigation.
That guy was an engineer named Simcha Blas. He got the idea for drip irrigation after seeing a tree that was larger than the others around it. After digging around the roots, he found it was being watered by a leak in an underground pipe.
So this gave him the idea, but it took him some years, actually, until plastic was introduced, to start and make experiments with drippers that will emit water in small drops. And this is basically drip irrigation.
Blas met the farmers of Kibbutz Hatzirim, and together they started a company called Netafim, which means drops of water in Hebrew. Soon they boosted their crop yield by 50% and used 40% less water to do it.
Drip irrigation saves a lot of water. Producing more, getting more, yet not harming the environment.
For almost half a century, the company has lived up to its slogan, grow more with less, not just in Israel, but in 110 countries around the world, from sugarcane fields in the Philippines to tea plantations in Tanzania.
You know, India is now our number one country. The results, looking at the yield increase, were amazing. 50% of the farmers got an increase in yield between 25 and 50%. Another 25% of the farmers got an increase in yield of up to 75%.
Netafim even designed a system that works solely on gravity for places like Peru, where remote mountain farmers don't have electricity.
The plant doesn't know the difference. The plant doesn't know that you don't have a $20,000 computer behind the dripper. And it works beautifully. Everyone is talking about water scarcity. 70% of the water that we have available in the world is used for agriculture. Now, if we save only 15% in agriculture, we can more than double the available water for drinking and sanitation. In Hebrew, we have a term which is called tikkun olam, which is fixing the world. And this is basically what drip irrigation does. This is my personal goal and challenge.
Amazing. Wow. As you're watching the blessing of God on Israel, wow. Isn't it? It's just like, wow.
Beautiful.
I mean, we haven't even begun yet. We have other things we're going to talk about, technology and the medical type technology. And this is just some of the things that are going on there. And when you see people wanting to fire bombs, people that are living like the 1650s or something,
yeah.
And no matter with all the money being put there, they're still oppressing their people. They're still, they have, as we said, on a payroll, as we reported on, they're putting people on a payroll that are cash for killers. This is what Israel's doing. Israel's helping people.
Yeah.
Israel's being kind. Jacob is blessing the people in the face of the earth. Just like
they're
God said he would do.
A water surplus. They're going to help the Syrian refugees have water.
Yeah.
I mean, how awesome is that?
A place, it's pretty awesome.
A place that was actually dry and had no water. I mean, it's just amazing. It's so inspiring when you look at that and, wow, you know, what they're able to accomplish. just kind of just blows you away.
And getting context, you think that the Palestinian people in Gaza, Hamas is in that they actually merged their government, the Palestinian government, what they had, they merged it with Hamas. As you heard, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu say, that ain't going to work.
Right.
And it's happening right now. And so this whole thing about two-state solution and these Palestinian folks that are putting people on the payroll for killing Jews, cash for killers. Mm. I mean, we need to understand this. And I know that you have something for us to help
us
understand
this. Yes, Dennis Prager from Prager University does a 5-minute video and he explains the problem in the Middle East in very simple layman's terms that we can all understand it. And he just breaks it down and with truth. We want you to watch this and get some insight from it.
So when you see this, you're seeing Palestinians, understand the Palestinian people who are merged with Hamas, who are shooting missiles into Israel right now. We're going to find out some pretty interesting things. There's no such thing as dividing the land up and being okay with God.
Listen. Yeah.
When I did my graduate studies at the Middle East Institute at Columbia University's School of International Affairs, I took many courses on the question of the Middle East conflict. Semester after semester, we studied the Middle East conflict as if it was the most complex conflict in the world, when in fact, it is probably the easiest conflict in the world to explain. It may be the hardest to solve, but it is the easiest to explain. In a nutshell, it's this. One side wants the other side dead. Israel wants to exist as a Jewish state and to live in peace. Israel also recognizes the right of Palestinians to have their own state and to live in peace. The problem, however, is that most Palestinians and many other Muslims and Arabs do not recognize the right of the Jewish state of Israel to exist. This has been true since 1947, when the United Nations voted to divide the land called Palestine into a Jewish state and an Arab state. The Jews accepted the United Nations partition, but no Arab or any other Muslim country accepted it. When British rule ended on May 15, 1948, the armies of all the neighboring Arab states, Lebanon, Syria, Iraq, Transjordan, and Egypt, attacked the one-day-old state of Israel in order to destroy it. But to the world's surprise, the little Jewish state survived. Then it happened again. In 1967, the dictator of Egypt, Gamal Abdel Nasser, announced his plan, in his words, to destroy Israel. He placed Egyptian troops on Israel's border, and armies of surrounding Arab countries were also mobilized to attack. However, Israel preemptively attacked Egypt and Syria. Israel did not attack Jordan and begged Jordan's king not to join the war. But he did. And only because of that did Israel take control of Jordanian land, specifically the West Bank of the Jordan River. Shortly after the war, the Arab states went to Khartoum, Sudan, and announced their famous three no's: no recognition, no peace, and no negotiations. What was Israel supposed to do? Well, one thing Israel did a little more than a decade later in 1978 was to give the entire Sinai Peninsula, an area of land bigger than Israel itself and with oil, back to Egypt, because Egypt, under new leadership, signed a peace agreement with Israel. So Israel gave land for the promise of peace with Egypt, and it has always been willing to do the same thing with the Palestinians. All the Palestinians have ever had to do is recognize Israel as a Jewish state and promised to live in peace with it. But when Israel has proposed trading land for peace, as it did in 2000, when it agreed to give the Palestinians a sovereign state in more than 95% of the West Bank and all of Gaza, the Palestinian leadership rejected the offer and instead responded by sending waves of suicide terrorists into Israel. Meanwhile, Palestinian radio, television, and school curricula remain filled with glorification of terrorists, demonization of Jews, and the daily repeated message that Israel should cease to exist. So it's not hard to explain the Middle East dispute. One side wants the other dead. The motto of Hamas, the Palestinian rulers of Gaza, is, We love death as much as the Jews love life. There are 22 Arab states in the world, stretching from the Atlantic Ocean to the Indian Ocean. There is one Jewish state in the world, and it is about the size of New Jersey. In fact, tiny El Salvador is larger than Israel. Finally, think about these two questions. If tomorrow Israel laid down its arms and announced, "We will fight no more," what would happen? And if the Arab countries around Israel laid down their arms and announced, "We will fight no more," what would happen? In the first case, there would be an immediate destruction of the state of Israel and mass murder of its Jewish population. In the second case, there would be peace the next day. As I said at the outset, it is a simple problem to describe. One side wants the other dead. And if it didn't, there would be peace. Please remember this. There has never been a state in the geographic area known as Palestine that was not Jewish. Israel is the third Jewish state to exist in that area. There was never an Arab state, never a Palestinian state, never a Muslim or any other state. That's the issue. Why can't the one Jewish state the size of El Salvador be allowed to exist? That is the Middle East problem. I'm Dennis Prager.
When you think about it, it's just such a good explanation about what's taking place. And so the question you would ask yourself when you're looking at that, why do intelligent leaders from around the world keep on trying to do something that they know that the radical Islam, the Palestinian folks, they're not going to agree with it. No peace, no negotiation, period. They're just not going to do it. What is their goal? First of all, that means that these intelligent people who are chosen around the world to lead, including our leaders here, they're expecting something else to happen.
Yeah.
And when you look at Alinsky methodologies, to be able to, as we just said recently, you know, Marshall Gantz said, you have to polarize before you organize. And look how polarized the Middle East is. I mean, everybody's against everybody, but they're getting there. But one particular tactic they have, they said, choose your target, pick it, freeze it, criticize it. And what is that one target then that they're picking? They're picking Israel as a target. That is that commonality. And so the question is, if they're not trying to really get two states solution because they're never going to agree with it, then what are they trying to do? Remove Israel from the face of the earth.
Yeah.
I mean, even if they don't even know, you know, that, you know, maybe the radical Muslims and Hamas, and they may have this paradigm in their head thinking, you know, we're going to have all these resources and have this land, but the people behind the scenes or the Ephesians 6:12, you wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against spiritual wickedness. Lucifer, his goal is to come in and to destroy the Jews. Because the Jews are saying, listen, you know, you could come and be a citizen of Israel. You could be a citizen of Israel. Come on in. You have all the rights. The freest Arabs in the Middle East are in Israel. They're citizens of Israel. The freest Muslims in the Middle East are in Israel because it's a free country. And but what you're seeing is it looks like the only thing, and I don't know, this is what I'm thinking, the only thing that would satisfy the Palestinians is if there's a Palestine state and they would allow the Jews to be a citizen of their Palestinian state, which wouldn't last long. If you look right now what's happening in Iraq to the Christians and the Jews, if you look what's happening in Syria to the Christian and the Jews, if you look what's happening in Egypt to the Christian and the Jews, and you go to Jordan and see what's happening, you go to Saudi Arabia and see what's happening, you go to Pakistan and see what's happening, I mean, you go to Afghanistan and see what's happening. I mean, it's not like a complicated thing. It makes you really wonder. It's like, do you really believe this? I mean, there's something else going on here. What is it?
Yeah.
And it boils down to when you look at James, the book of James, and you read it, he says the reason why people argue is they don't get what they want. And what they want is they want the blessings of God without God.
Yeah.
Right. They want what the Jews have, but they don't understand they have that because of the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So if you're, and we have a lot of listeners that are connected with us and viewers that are in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
And we just want to say to you, you can have that. You don't have to take Israel's land or whoever's promoting that around your community. You don't have to have that. It's God. This is what God did. God sent his son so that you can have exactly what you're seeing happen in Israel, the blessings of God. He sent his son because he realized, and you can see, you know, how, you know, evil men's hearts are and the negative things that happen and how bad men treat men and how bad men's religion is. But Jesus, this is what God did. God sent his son to live as we live. And he did it in such a way that he was born of a virgin. God and this particular lady named Mary, young virgin lady, that his spirit hovered over her and while she was still pure, and God conceived his son inside her womb. And he did that because what people are really wanting in Israel, he wants it for you. He wants that for you. You don't have to take this land. You have to accept his son. That's the answer. You're never going to get it any other way. And so what happened was he was born from this virgin woman, just like a child. So he was all God, all man, the son of God. He lived in this life, this terrible, sinful world that we've been seeing things happen in, and all this evil and death and mayhem, where men actually just behead each other and cut their hands off and crucify each other and just take each other's things. He walked through all that, but he didn't do any of that. He did it without making any mistakes, without sinning at all. He did everything right the way God wants us to, but he's the only one that did it. And then what he did, he said, you know what? This is what the Father wants from me. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to lay down my life. I'm going to be the sacrifice, because every sin requires a sacrifice. The only way there's forgiveness of sin is there's bloodshed. But it has to be blood that's pure blood, that's sinless, that nothing wrong. And that's only his son. His son did that. So what God did, God said, I'm going to offer Jesus. I'm going to give you my son so you can have this blessing of mine. I'm going to give you my son, that if you accept my son, I'm going to bring you into a blessed land. I'm preparing a place that I would like for you to be at. This is all just temporary stuff that you're seeing. You're jealous over my blessing, but I actually gave you my son. So I'm telling you, I'm jealous over you. I want you to be in a relationship with me. That's what this is. And so he walked this sinless life. He said, here I am. He prayed in that valley, you know, in the Garden of Gethsemane, right there by the Eastern Gate. When you look at that hotel sitting up on that hill, the Mount of Olives, I mean, God's son knelt and he prayed right there. And he said, you know, take this cup from me, but not my will, but your will be done. In other words, it was such a big price to pay, because he was going to take on the sins of the world. On the sins of the world. So take him on and say, you know what? Not my will, but your will be done. Then they arrested him. They beat him. They pressed a crown of thorns in his head. And they took him and they nailed to this innocent son of God. They nailed him to a cross and put him out there. And all that everybody just see, this particular land that people are trying to fight over, God was going, it's not what's under the cross. It's what's on the cross. I created all this and I want to give it to you. But there's one thing you have to do. When his son died on the cross, that was holy blood that was shed. The blood of God, and the earth shook. And they took him down when he had died and they put him in a grave. And when he was in that tomb, in that grave, he took the keys to death, hell, and the grave. You can live forever. You can live forever. And then on the third day, Father God, who gave him as a sacrifice for us, raised him from the dead. And all of a sudden, when they went and looked for him, they couldn't find him, because this big, huge stone that was in front of the tomb was rolled away by angels. And they said, where is he at? And angels were there. I said, listen, why are you looking for the living amongst the dead? This same Jesus that was dead and crucified is alive. He is alive. And he walked amongst all the folks. This is what the turmoil is about. This is what the turmoil is about. It's not about the land. It's about the Son. It's not about the land, L-A-N-D. It's about the Lamb of God. You can have the blessing. You can have it right where you are. His name is Jesus Christ. He sits at the right hand of the Father right now saying, I sure hope they listen to Greg right now. I sure hope they look at all this chaos and this selfishness and this greed and fighting over this piece of land when they should be bowing down to the Lamb and let me forgive their sins and receive them in the family. If that's you, if you want this blessing that everybody thinks they're fighting over, the true blessings in heaven. I want you to make Jesus Christ the Lord of your life. Call out to him right now or go to meetmyfather.org and find out how we met God through his son, Jesus Christ. The land is real. It's just not, the blessing's not there. The blessing is the throne room of God. God is blessing Israel. You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN-TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN-TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN TV and the Daily Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light.